Ever want to know all about horses? Then stick around for 30 minutes with natural horseman Jim Swanner. I'm alive and I'm free. Who wouldn't want to be me? Learn more all about horses at jimswanner.com.
Hi folks, Jim Swanner here, host of All About Horses and a big fan of Tractor Supply Company. Can't think of a better sponsor for the show because Tractor Supply is all about horses and everything you need for grooming, health, feed, and care. Even more importantly, at Tractor Supply, you get the know-how of their people. They just don't sell you products, they give you advice and answer questions since many of them own and breed horses themselves. Stop by Tractor Supply at 601 U.S. Highway 72 West in Athens and see for yourself. Tell them Jim Swanner sent you. You'll be glad you did. I always am.
After a long, hard day's work on the farm, do something special for yourself. Treat yourself to some of that good, flavor-filled Witt's Barbecue located in Ardmore and Fayetteville, Tennessee. Witt's Barbecue has been smoking up the South since 1966. You know they have the best barbecue around, but you may want to try some of the other items on their menu, such as ribs, stuffed potatoes, or whole smoked chickens. So if you find yourself in Ardmore or Fayetteville, Tennessee, stop by Witt's for the best barbecue around. Weston and Lori Witt will be glad to serve you.
Now back to more All About Horses.
All right. Welcome to All About Horses this morning. We have a very special guest on with us. She is a mule and donkey expert, actually of all breeds, equine breeds. She is the owner of Lucky Three Ranch in Loveland, Colorado. She is a TV personality. And you may know her from Jasper the Mule series, the books. So her name is Meredith Hodges. Meredith, welcome to the show this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. It's nice to be here.
All right, let's just get right into talking about what you do, and you know the difference between a donkey and a mule, and you know, of course, you know a lot of people. You know, we kind of know what the difference is, but I want to hear your way of telling it.
Well, surprisingly, I've been in the business for 40 years, and there's still a lot of people out there that still don't know the difference between a donkey and a mule, so I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Okay. Donkeys are an actual breed, and they've been around since the Bible, and so have mules, but mules are a cross between a male donkey and a female horse.
Uh-huh.
And that's really the only way you can get a mule. The reverse cross is often referred to as a mule, but it's actually where if you breed a stallion to a female donkey or a jennet, what you get is a hinny.
Uh-huh, okay.
As far as training is concerned, hinnies and mules are very, very much the same. It's very difficult to even tell them apart.
But
hinnies tend to have a longer back than the mules do, and it's because of the influence of the donkey, where the mules tend to get more of a horsey build to them in the torso. And both of them inherit the best qualities from both the donkeys and the horses. The horses contribute the overall equine beauty and athleticism of the horse, and the donkey Jack contributes endurance, strength, and intelligence. And when you put those two together, the offspring is always better than the parents that he came out of.
Uh-huh.
And mules are just amazingly agile and athletic, and it's really important that you learn how to train them properly, too, because of this.
Uh-huh. I've always heard that mules are non-forgiving.
No, that's not entirely true.
Okay.
Mules are not necessarily unforgiving, but what they are is intolerant of an impolite attitude.
Okay.
And so it is important that you think when you've got mules, right from the time that you breed them. When you're breeding for a mule, for instance, you want to consider what kinds of activities that you're going to want to be doing with him, because it makes a difference as to what mare you're going to choose.
Mm-hmm.
You choose the mare for the specific type of athleticism that she's particularly good at. If you want an all-around versatile mule, you would breed from an Appaloosa or a Paint or a Quarter Horse.
Mm-hmm.
If you want something with more high action and some speed, you would breed to a Thoroughbred. If you want more endurance and stamina for competitive trail riding and endurance, you might want to go with an Arabian.
Mm-hmm.
And so goes, you know, in the breeding of the mule. And then when you get to the training, it's what I do and what I've learned from these mules is that you have to take things in steps, just like we do with our children. Mm-hmm. It takes us 12 years to train our children how to be out in the workforce.
Yeah.
And yet we expect these equines to get trained in 30 to 60 to 90 days.
Yeah.
And we're not really considering their bodies, how their bodies are structured, and how they're built up when we do this. Mm-hmm. You can't build muscle in that short a time. And mules are very sensitive to that because they're very hard workers and they're energy conservers. They also, they're more sure-footed, they're more resistant to parasites and disease. They are a thinking animal, mm-hmm. so sometimes it takes them a few minutes to decide if what you're asking them to do is the right thing.
Yeah.
And it's my experience that it isn't the mules that were stubborn and got the, you know, it wasn't because they were stubborn. It was because the people handling them were impatient and intolerant of this slow thinking, processing process
yeah.
that they go through. And that's why I've broken my training down into very, very small steps and a whole year on leading training. And that's for physical development of the body of the equine. It's kind of like Pilates is for human beings when you do it correctly. We do smooth arcs, straight lines, square halts all the time to build good postural behaviors mm-hmm. so that they grow up being in good posture and building strength and good posture. Now, posture is not something that anybody is born with, and that's why letting horses run out in the open or mules and donkeys to just go run is not necessarily the best way mm-hmm. to help them build muscle, because 9 times out of 10, they're going to be out of a good equine posture, and they're going to yeah. build muscle that way. And then when you finally get on and ride, you have to break that all away, and that's what makes training so difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
When you start out the way we train, with the leading training and paying attention to posture and muscle building right from the very beginning, whether it's an older animal or a foal just starting out, this is an ongoing process, and you build it up the right way. Everything comes easier. The animal understands that you're making them feel better, so they're more willing to perform for you.
Mm-hmm. So, or you know, I know if I'm hearing you right, it takes a little longer for the mule because of their thinking process.
Well, if you don't want to run into trouble.
Yeah.
If you try to use a lot of these quicker horse training techniques, you'll find that they bolt, they run, they yank the lead rope out of your hand if you're on the ground, or they run off with you when you're on their back.
Uh-huh.
And it's usually due to a lack of balance or because something is sore and uncomfortable, and people like to blame it on tack and equipment.
Yeah.
When it really isn't that, and something that's as simple as imprinting, just for foals, well, that couldn't be more wrong.
Uh-huh.
Because when you're imprinting a foal, yes, you do want the foal to get used to your touch and your smell and all of that. But the other side of that coin is that you should be learning what he likes, you know, how he likes to be touched with
right.
your hands, and what, you know, where he's more sensitive, where he isn't. So it's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes on not only just when they're foals, but right on through their training into their adulthood and everything, because the way you touch them and handle them that way will determine whether they're going to be cooperative and willing to do the things that you want to do with them.
Mm-hmm. You know, growing up, I don't know a whole lot about mules, but growing up, I always heard about, you know, the big mule, and they called them the Red Georgia Mule.
Mm-hmm.
All right, is that a particular breed of mule, or is it are they bred to draft horses, or to get?
I'm sure they were bred to draft horses
yeah.
or partial draft horses, draft horse crosses, and things
mm-hmm.
like that. Basically, they're bigger mules, they're stouter mules, they're coarser mules. But the other side of that is that most of the horses back in the old days were bred for, you know, to better the breeds.
Yeah.
So the mares that were being used for mule breeding were culled out of the breeding herds. So they weren't the best of the best. And what you got was some pretty coarse animals. Now, that's not true these days. In the last 45 years that I've been promoting mules and donkeys,
mm-hmm.
we have started breeding much better mares from all types of horses,
mm-hmm.
Draft horses included. They have mule pulls and things like that, too. And also, the interesting thing when you're talking about breeding is you would think that if you bred to a mammoth jack and a big mare, you'd get a big mule. But that's not necessarily the way donkeys are broken down by size, because there's a lot of interbreeding that took place when the Spanish explorers turned their donkeys loose. And so we don't have a clear registry of purebred donkeys here, so we separate them by size. And the mammoths are over 56 inches. But what they do is the mare is the one that's responsible for the height of the mule. Mm-hmm. And the mule from a mare will generally be her height 2 inches smaller or 2 inches taller.
Yeah.
But what the jack contributes, and a mammoth jack in particular, is the thickness of the bone. So where it's desirable to breed a mammoth jack to, say, a draft horse for big pulling, you know, pulling and stuff like that, so you have a big one, that is the preference. But it also works if you want to get a shorter animal that still has that thickness of bone, then you can breed to a quarter horse, and what you are breeding for, basically, is a pack mule.
Yeah. Meredith, let's hold that thought right there. We're up on a break. Folks, y'all stay tuned with Meredith Hodges.
All About Horses.
Have you been looking for a place to purchase the type of equipment that Jim Swanner and many of his students use? Natural Equipment of Clarencetown, North South Wales will be your next stop. If you aren't in Australia, you can check them out at their website, www.naturalequipment.com.au. Jim has been purchasing from them, and so have many of his students and clinic attendees for years. Nothing but good things to say. Whether you are looking for halters, leads, educational material, tack, or clothing, I'll just bet you will find it all at Natural Equipment.
Have any building projects you need to get completed? Collins Supply on Highway 72 West in Athens is where you need to begin. You'll find the professional help you need for all your building projects. Whether you're building a fence or a building, Collins Supply can help you with the supplies you need. If it's plumbing supplies, appliances, or insulation, Collins Supply can help you there too. Call Lakin, Dwight, John, or Beth at 256-232-3498. That's Collins Supply, Highway 72 West in Athens.
Spry Funeral Home reminds you that one of the wisest decisions you'll ever make is to pre-plan your funeral. Spry Funeral Home offers pre-planning, complete funeral arrangements, and honors all burial and cash policies. Founded by S.L. Spry in 1919, Spry Funeral Home has always believed that service to you is their first priority. Now in the third generation of Spry's, Greg and Jimmy invite you to call them at 232-2622 or stop by their facilities on Highway 72 to find out more about how you can prearrange your funeral. Spry Funeral Home.
Now back to more All About Horses.
All right, welcome back to All About Horses. We're talking with Meredith Hodges this morning, and we're talking about mules and donkeys. And before we went into the break, Meredith, we were talking about breeding of the mules. So you wanted to continue on that and we're going to talk about the miniatures as well.
Sure. Just to reiterate, I was just saying how you use a mammoth jack because the jack actually contributes the thickness of bone.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're breeding for pack mules and draft mules, you would want to use a mammoth jack and retain that thickness of bone. But if you want a mule that is more refined, a more refined horse-like looking saddle mule, then you would want to breed to a standard or a large standard jack to keep that kind of refinement.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same holds true when you get to the miniatures. Of course, you use miniature jacks and ponies to breed for the smaller ones. And people asked me if I was, you know, able to apply the training techniques to all of these different sizes, different types, and everything. And of course, I say yes, because my training is not to train for anything in particular. It's versatility training and just a conditioning program to prepare the animal to carry a rider and to be good at whatever they decide or that you decide you want to do with them. Mm-hmm. They will have their own body strength, their own self-carriage, and it's just like you getting strong or, say, a football player. They don't play football to go play the game. They have to do exercises to exercise all the muscles in their body mm-hmm. before they can go in the game and become a star.
Yeah.
And so that's what my program is about. And because I focused on saddle mules in the beginning, a lot of people thought maybe my training techniques wouldn't work on the draft mules and the miniatures. But I have since 2010, I rescued two draft mules, and one of them was severely injured. Mm. And I applied this program, and both of them stayed sound. The one that was a real problem, I had to put down after a year. They told me he had a hairline fracture on his hip.
Mm-hmm.
But after I put him down, I found out that his whole hip was shattered.
Oh, goodness.
And he never showed any lameness through my program at all, and he was only, towards the end, he got a bout with the laminitis, and we had to put him on bute, I think, 3 times for 5 days.
Mm.
That was the only drugs that we used during the whole thing. And so for pulling animals, this is exactly what they need, because it's just like you and me learning to lift something properly. You learn to lift with your legs and not with your back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these guys need to learn to have impulsion coming from behind and have the power coming from behind. And this only comes from being in good posture, and my training program is postural training.
Yeah.
The problems that people said they had with the miniatures was that they were jumping up on top of them. They were running off in a split second. Those mm-hmm. little guys can disappear in an instant. They are so quick.
Yeah.
And so I kind of made it my business to wonder why they were leaving. Not so much that the training wouldn't work on them, but why are they always leaving,
mm-hmm.
you know, or jumping up on you and making training just nothing but a problem? And I came to the realization that the minis are simply trying to make eye contact with you.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's why they're jumping up like that.
That's why they jump up on you. So
there you go, Ken.
I got two miniature donkeys for my co-producer, and
uh-huh.
I've been training them, and along with two miniature mules and a miniature horse that I have.
Yeah.
And we stopped the jumping simply by getting down on my knees and doing whatever I could
yeah.
at eye level with them.
That's what I was about to say. You know, get down on your hands and knees
exactly.
and make contact with them.
And people go, oh, they're going to rear up on you, and they're gonna poke your eye out, or they're going to hurt
yeah.
you. And I've had these guys for 4 years now.
Yeah.
They have never done anything like that. And
yeah.
I can do everything, you know, grooming, picking up their feet and everything right from my knees. When I teach them to go through obstacles
yeah.
and everything on the lead rope, we just, whenever I can, I get down on my knees and I look them in the eye and I go ahead and coax them forward.
Yeah.
And, of course, my program is a reward system program based on behavior modification.
Yeah.
I was a psychiatric technician in the state hospitals back in California in the
uh-huh.
70s and learned how to do this reward system of training there with people when we were teaching them how to eat and how to dress themselves and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this a really good way to just transfer over to the animals to get them to do
yeah.
What I wanted them to do, with the assumption that nobody's going to work for nothing, and animals
yeah.
don't like working for a pat on the head.
Right.
They want something substantial.
That's it.
Just
yeah.
like we do.
And they'll work harder for that reward.
That's exactly right, and they
yeah.
do. But that your job is to learn how to dispense those rewards appropriately.
Yeah, and saying that, there's a question that I think we were talking about it the other day when we were having our pre-interview before today. And you were saying that we need to train our own mules or horses or.
Yes, we do. Whenever people ask me if I refer any trainers or will I train their mule, I tell them that the relationship is their own and it's something that they need to cultivate by themselves.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a trainer's job to guide them in that process.
Right. Yeah.
But what I ask them is, would you ask someone else to go out and make a friend for you?
Yeah.
That's really what you're asking when you send your animal to a trainer. They're
yeah.
a living, breathing creature. They're not like a car. You can't send them out to get tuned up so you can drive them.
That's right, yeah. And that's what I tell people all the time. You know, Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of trainers. But the thing is, you know, when you get your mule or donkey or your horse or your cow, whatever, when you get it back, you're still not going to know anything.
That's exactly right. And it's important that you do. And if you do put your animal with a trainer, you better darn well be there every day when he's working with that animal of yours so that you can learn, too.
And I've ran into this, too, and you probably have, too, when you're working with someone with their equid. Is that horse or that equid becomes, even with the owner there, and you're teaching the owner how to do things and what to do and under your tutelage, that equid still becomes, and I have a couple of students that say that their horses are trainer sour.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that can happen when you're not allowed that time alone with your animal to make your own mistakes.
Yeah, and I have to hide. When we're doing a class, I have to...
With your equine.
Yeah.
And make it a partnership, you know? Yeah. If something's not going right, then these equines are really very honest in their response.
Yes.
So if you're having problems with your equine, you need to look to yourself and say, am I explaining this clearly to him?
Mm-hmm.
Or should I change my approach a little and make it a little easier, for instance?
Yeah.
And if you've got a barrel on its side out in the arena and he's not jumping over that barrel, what do? Well, you get three barrels and you put them on the wall, and then you have your animal stay on the lunge line, which also, by the way, needs to be taught.
Yes, it does.
Steps.
Yes.
If this is just an example, so you put the barrels coming perpendicular to the wall, and you're standing at the end of them, and you send them over the barrels, and they have nowhere else to.
That's right.
The wall on one side, they got you on the other. And so once they do that, then you take a barrel away. Now it's narrower.
Yeah.
And then you send them over the barrels that way, and still with you on one side, the wall on the other, until you're down to one barrel.
Yeah.
Once they do the one barrel along the wall, then you can move it out in the open and ask them to go over it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What you have done is you have set them up to succeed.
That's right. That's right. Well, Meredith, we're up on another break right here. And a couple of things I want to touch on when we come back in the next segment. I want to talk about groundwork. You know, how do you get started? And you know, we don't have to go into every aspect, but I want to talk about that. And, you know, how would someone get started? I wanted to also want to talk about your accomplishments over the years. There's a tons I've seen on your website, but I do want to talk about that, and I want to get your information out there, how people get in touch with you and get your programs and learn more about these, and I love this word, the long ears.
We'll do that.
Folks, y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back with Meredith Hodges.
All About Horses.
One potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato. Hey, folks, this is Jim Swanner, host of All About Horses. You don't have to play a child's game when choosing a heating and cooling company. Simply call Allen Brown Heating and Cooling at 256-232-4844. They're good, honest people doing reliable work. Whether you're cold and need heat or whether you're hot and need cool, call Allen Brown Heating and Cooling at 256-232-4844. You'll be glad you did. Are you on Facebook? Do you have a fun page on Facebook and need help to use it to your advantage? The Tennessee Valley Buzz can help. Are you thinking about building a social media campaign to promote your business or product, but don't know where to start? Maybe you want to build a fan base and create curiosity in your target audience and motivate followers, fans, customers to like your page. The Tennessee Valley Buzz has packages to fit your budget to build your buzz. Tennessee Valley Buzz is your real-time local buzz for events, restaurants, and businesses right here in the Tennessee Valley. Keep it local. Support local independent businesses. Keep your dollars working in your local economy. Support local independent business. A strong Main Street supports the whole community. To build your business, give Tennessee Valley Buzz a call at 256-683-5800.
Now back to more All About Horses.
Welcome back to All About Horses. We're speaking with Meredith Hodges this morning, and this is very interesting. And before we get into the next segment, I do want to invite you to come back because we hadn't even touched the surface on some of the things that we'd like to talk about.
I'd be happy to do that.
But what I'd like to talk about is you know, we want to get into talking about the groundwork and you know, how would someone get started, and also all of your accomplishments over the years in your jumping and dressage and you know, all the stuff you've done with these mules. I mean, it's just fascinating, the accomplishments that you've done.
Well, thank you very much. I think that getting into dressage back in 1986 is what really laid the base for all of my training, because I realized that we weren't even ready for training level when we started. And that's supposed to be level one with dressage.
Yeah.
So it kind of got me thinking that perhaps there is a whole lot of stuff we've got to do before we even get on and start working on their backs.
Yes.
And so what I do is, like I was saying earlier, imprinting is not something that just you do and it's over. It's something that's ongoing that you start with a foal.
Right.
But even if you've got an older animal that hasn't had the benefit of this kind of training, that is the place to start.
Yes.
My DVD series is a series of exercises, DVDs 1 through 10, that address these training things in order, in a logical and sequential order that sets your animal and you up for success. And we begin with leading training, not only to teach them to follow and change their fear into curiosity over obstacles and around things that they might be spooked about, but it's very segmented, very definite in its execution. We spend 6 months on the lead line just doing flat work with gradual arcs and straight lines, and correct backing, straight backing, turning away from you always, always, always. And the most important thing is squaring up every time you stop.
Mm-hmm.
And this does not take place in the arena. It begins from the time you go to the gate to get your animal.
Yes.
And what you feed your animal is important, too. And crimped oats are the only thing that I've found that they will continue to work for. And this is why I feed my animals crimped oats, a crimped oats mix with vitamins in it for their daily requirements. But the other thing is these same crimped oats are what I use for the reward.
Yeah.
When I go to get my animals, I do not want to chase them, not ever, so I never do.
Right.
I go to the gate or the stall door, and I call them to me. And because of the way I feed, they will come to me.
Yeah.
I feed the oats mix in the evening so that in the spring, when I can only turn them out for an hour at a time for their own safety, if I feed at 5, I turn them out at 4. If I didn't have the oats, they would not come back in. But since their oats are being fed in the evening, they will come off the grass because they actually prefer the oats.
Yeah.
And then in the morning, when I'm only feeding grass hay, if I come out after breakfast and I want to work with them, I stand at the gate and I go, "Hey, want some oats with your breakfast?" They're always there. They're always, always there.
Yeah.
29 head, I do not have to chase.
Yeah.
And then it's that showmanship is what this is usually called.
Yeah.
When you stand in good posture, you put your halter on, you hold the lead rope in your left hand, you point in the direction of travel with your right hand, and your right hand is also used to keep that equine's head at your shoulder, and you match your legs with his front legs,
mm-hmm.
and you both walk in perfect posture all the time, all the way to where you're going to tack him up, and when you're tacking him up, the whole time you're with them, and until you put them back. And this starts changing their natural way of moving to a more structured and more posturally correct way of moving.
So are they mimicking you?
Over 2 years, with all the exercises we go through, you will find that you have actually affected their posture, and they will be moving in good posture.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're doing flat work, we're building strength and balance on the lead rope. Then we do that for 6 months. Then we do over obstacles, first to change the fear into curiosity, and then next to add coordination to the strength and balance that you've already developed. Now they're ready to go to the round pin and learn how to balance on a circle. If you went straight to the round pin, what you would get is them leaning out of balance and using the wall as kind of a visual support, and their balance would not be correct. And balancing on a circle can be really detrimental to the hocks and the fetlocks if they're not strengthened properly first.
Yeah.
And then in the round pin, we do lunging and ground driving and in preparation for going out into the open arena. And we do all the mounting in the round pin after they've gone through all of these exercises. exercises, so getting on becomes a formality, and the only thing the animal has to get used to is your legs and the weight on their back once you get on. But since they now have self-carriage, your shifting weight doesn't bother them anymore, and you don't get bucking, you don't get bolting, you don't get any bad behavior.
Okay, so yeah, I'll have to go in and check out the 10 DVD series and kind of investigate
that.
Well,
let me say this too. The DVD series is the collection of the exercises.
Right.
In sequence.
Yeah.
The Equus Revisited manual and DVD that I have is why you're doing the exercises.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The guide to raising and showing is all of the things around the training and management issues and diseases and just general horsemanship things that you need to know. And then tapes 9 and 10 and the book Donkey Training are things that are specific to donkeys because donkeys don't necessarily do things in the same order that mules and horses will.
Yeah.
We think lunging is completely stupid.
Yeah.
We don't see any point in running around fast in a circle to come back to the same point.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to them. So that, if you eliminate the lunging at the normal time when you would be doing it with mules and horses and just go on to the ground driving and then get on and ride and everything's fine, then you can come back after you've taught them that, and then your donkeys will lunge.
Yeah. Well, Meredith, we're out of time. This has been awesome.
Well, go to my website.
Yes. Go ahead and give that information.
Pardon?
Give your website information, how people can get in touch with you.
www.lucky3ranch.com, and that's all spelled out. And on the left side, we have other websites you can go to. You can click on Jasper the Mule's website and see all the exciting adventures that Jasper's been through.
Yeah.
And he's our animated character for kids and adults. And I have now an online equine school called the Training Mules and Donkeys, TMD, Equine University, which is a university for all breeds.
Yeah. Meredith, I appreciate you being on the show this morning, and we will definitely have you back because we got a list of things we need to cover and to help people better with their mules, their donkeys, and also their horses.
Well, I'm up for that.
All right. Folks, y'all tune in again next week for another All About Horses on WKAC 1080.
Join us next week and visit jimswanner.com to learn more all about horses.